Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
That's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod.
Yes, ready.
Nice.
Yeah.
How are you?
Oh, is that the start?
It is.
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Good. Did you go to both Juventus and Bournemouth?
I did.
And how differing were those experiences? Bournemouth, proper shoddy old ground, isn't it? In a nice way.
Yeah, no, I quite like Bournemouth's ground, actually. It's quite neat and tidy. Like, it's got four kind of symmetrical stands, all single tier, I think.
Looks like.
Feels like quite a compact, nice little stadium.
It's got murals on each corner, isn't it?
Murals.
What did I say?
You said murals.
Could be that as well. Do you think they have to redo them every season?
I didn't notice them, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I can't answer that one.
Yeah, Wembley was very different. I actually had a really good time despite the result.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was a bit pissed. So.
Okay.
I mean, Juventus in Champions League, and we'll come on.
If you can't
to
enjoy
it.
That, what can you enjoy?
I mean, 5 minutes was awful when they scored twice, but I think even then, like, you kind of realize, you remembered that it's the Champions League and it's the last 16, and we're 2-1 down at home, and you know, for the next 25 minutes, we're going to have to throw the kitchen sink a bit, and we did, and one nearly went over the line, like right at the very end, and I don't know, it was just exciting. Like, it didn't work out, and it wasn't great, but what were our odds of actually winning the Champions League anyway? And the fact is, we did give it a good go. We didn't go out in the same way as Real Madrid in 2011, where tie was done by half-time in the first leg. You know, there were positives. It was disappointing, but I thought it was all right. Apologies for not getting a pod out last week, by the way. Various reasons for this, mostly geographical. I was at the other end of the country. Where were you?
Just mincing around South London as usual, I think.
But if you didn't want to do one, just you on your own.
No, I couldn't find anyone else. It would have just been a monologue of me, and I thought that would be a bit too much.
I'm here to facilitate you, Dan. Before we talk about Juve, Harry Kane he's gone over quite heavily on his ankle under a challenge from Begovic at the weekend. What's the latest? Because it's Tuesday now we're recording this, so 2 days, nothing come out of the club, nothing from the player itself. What's the news?
Yeah, I think the latest is that he's due to have kind of checks today, so I don't think there's any point in us really speculating, because I think by the time people are listening to this, we might know a bit more.
Is there a case for didn't last time it happened? Because this is the third time it's happened on the same ankle,
isn't it?
Yeah,
he seems to be good for one of these, or two of them in the case of last season.
Are we letting the swelling
once
go
a year
down, maybe?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think it's a case of let the swelling go down, do a scan. I mean, the fact that there seemed to be a kind of conversation about carrying on, didn't there? Because he kind of walked around all the way from Begovic's goal to the dugout, or rather hobbled round. He didn't look in any fit state to play, to be fair. But he was then chatting for about 2 or 3 minutes to the club doctor before Lamella actually got stripped off and came on. So there seemed to be a conversation about whether he can continue or what he'd done. So I think just from a Spurs perspective, got to hope it's not too bad. I do suspect it'll be Swansea and Chelsea, at least.
Reasonable
to expect. But the international break, just as last year, comes at a great time because you can absorb some of that absence into the week off or 2 weeks off, as it will be. So I think if it's going to happen, which it does seem to, at least once a year, it's a good time to do it again over the international break.
I think, so I've done both ankles badly a number of times, particularly my right one. And the first time that I did it, I damaged ligaments. And
are you about to compare yourself to Harry Kane?
No, so just his the scenario he finds himself in.
Yeah. And I mean, so as physical specimens go,
fairly similar.
Very similar.
Very similar. Footballing ability, I'd say he shades it.
He edges it.
Just about. I mean, we've never had the opportunity to try it. That's the thing.
No.
I mean, I'm talking about him on one leg would still wipe the floor with me, I think.
I can't imagine you playing football.
I'm a brutish centre-back. Think of a non-pacey Jan Vertonghen.
A young Jean-Alan Boomson.
See? Totally fit. But no, so the first time I did it, they put me in cast, and it seized my ligaments. And after that, so the next time, or two or three times that I did it, the physio that I went and saw said, with ligament injuries, you have to get as much natural movement into it as possible from the very first day. So you have to be, if it's nothing's broken, you need to be walking on it, you need to be moving it around, you need to rotate it as much as possible, because that's the only way that you're going to get sort of its strength back, and the only way that you're going to manage to get through. So I'm wondering if he's got a part of that, of thinking, if I stay on for 10 minutes, because when did it happen? It was near half-time, wasn't it? Or halfway through the half?
It was about half an hour in.
Okay, maybe he was thinking, if I get to half-time, we look at it in the I'm speculating, but I'm just wondering, with ligament injuries, and now this is his third in the space of 18 months, he might just kind of know what to do with it now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll be back for Swansea, put it that way.
I don't think
he could have played on, really. And I think kind of best case scenario is it's very similar to what happened against Millwall last year, which I think everyone was fearing the worst, thinking, oh, this will be another two-monther, which had happened earlier in the season against Sunderland. And as it was just three games, and Spurs won all three, and Son played very well. So that's the ideal scenario. It is regrettable that it's the big FA Cup quarter final and then Chelsea. And it could have come at a better time in that regard, but just to repeat myself, international break, no one gives a crap about England against Italy and Holland.
Yeah, I think so.
To
play devil's advocate as well, unlikely to play against Swansea, but probably would have come on if we were in trouble. And against Chelsea, all right, it increases your chance of winning or getting a result. But it's Chelsea away. We just don't do anything there. Like, I know that's really defeatist of me to say, but if you ask me, who would you really want, or which game would you say, yeah, let's point to that and say, if he's going to have to miss
write
one,
off
every season, Chelsea away. Any other game, well, I say, yeah, there's a chance here. Chelsea away.
I mean, on the plus side, Spurs have got a 5-point cushion.
Yeah,
which means it's not an absolute must win game.
Exactly.
On the downside, though, with Kane up front, and even without Kane up front, winning that game, moving 8 points ahead of them, it could have kind of put that top four race to bed, or at least made it very, very comfortable in the running, which would have been nice. I think going there without him will not just in terms of the football, but just psychologically give them a massive boost, I think. Because, you know, the one thing they can't claim to have is a Harry Kane. They can keep a clean sheet on their day. They've got creativity in midfield. They've got match winners and kind of Hazard and Willian. But they just don't have that elite world-class striker. And Spurs do. And I think if Spurs go there without their elite world-class striker, that'll embolden Chelsea, definitely. It is a long way off. So,
yeah.
You know, and I think Wednesday, what will probably happen is... your cat's going quite wild. Excuse me if I
get just enjoying the great hot chat.
Quite right.
We'll
not doing shit. I think Wednesday there'll probably be there'll probably be an announcement from the club, and possibly, you know, tonight or for tomorrow morning's papers. You know, someone might have got hold of the scan information from his agent or something. So I don't think we'll have to wait too long.
And we'll talk about the ramifications of being without Kane when we talk about Bournemouth, but we do have to talk about Juventus. Dust has settled now, particularly because we've had another game and we've got it out of our system. Obviously, decent win at Bournemouth, coming from behind as well, that kind of mental toughness. But again, we will come on to that. The Juve game itself, what do you think about the tie as a whole? We were talking just before... we were talking just after we started recording. I really don't feel... I was gutted, absolutely gutted that it happened in the way it did, and it was...
We were talking after we started recording this.
So, yeah. So, we're talking on air about it, if you like. I didn't want to use the term on air, because I'm not a wanker.
Yeah.
I said at the start, Ben, Dan, that...
Understood.
All right, I'm gutted, and I'm gutted that it was there for us, and then in, something, what was it, 170 seconds, it was gone completely. And I'm gutted that we were taught that lesson in the manner that we were. I kind of feel like after the Chelsea game, the Battle of the Bridge, the 2-2, I feel like we were schooled a bit, and we, in some ways, we beat ourselves as much as anything, but still relatively proud of what we showed in that time. How do you feel about
it? Yeah, I think that's a decent assessment. You and I both tweeted something really similar.
Who did it first?
I don't know.
Almost certainly me.
Okay. I tweeted at full time. I do a little full time assessment tweet, and it was, and I saw your one sort of around the same time, and it was, you said something like, you know, they only played for 20 minutes, and it's really gutting.
And I scored four goals.
Yeah, and I said, you know, sickening, and that's the difference between serial winners and a very promising team. I think that was a kind of fair assessment. It was a bit of a sickener for Spurs, and they were the better team for probably 160 minutes of 180, at least, if not 165. Pochettino's message afterwards was very much that wasn't the case, that it wasn't experience, it was just, you know, one of those days. Spurs weren't clinical enough, but I think really the two kind of go hand in hand. Like the experienced teams that have been on that stage and know what it takes to win those games tend to be clinical. It's just part of what makes them who they are.
And taking advantage of at a time when you're on top.
Yes,
we should have won in Turin. And they sent blood in a matter of seconds after Higuain scored the equaliser. They grew. They were 10 feet tall,
The pitch. And Spurs, by contrast, I think in both games conceded a goal, then just froze.
Yeah.
And that was what killed them over two legs, was twice conceding quickly after conceding. You know, it feels like a kind of very Arsenal in the Premier League in a big game kind of thing to do. It's like, you know, conceding goals happens. Every team concedes goals. What the best, most experienced teams is then, you know, make sure they don't concede another one straight away, because that can kill you. And Spurs, to their immense credit, and we did it on the pod after the first leg, came back so well in Turin, but yeah, Juve weren't going to let that happen again after scoring, you know, a quick double.
It's funny, isn't it? Because after that game, you think we've done the hard part, and it's only after you watch both games that you realise that all of it's really fucking hard. Like, you go 2-0 down, it's really difficult to get back to 2-2. But then if you get 2-2 away from home and then you come back to the home game, it's really hard to go, what do we do? Do we attack? Do we defend? Do we sit on this? Then you go one goal up and it's really hard, because you think, if we concede now, we're in trouble. And we did concede a second, and for the second time, but in the tie, we were behind and we only had half an hour to fix it then. And you think, oh, fuck, this is really hard, isn't it? And then you got the last 5 minutes and you missed the big chance and you go, this is really fucking hard, isn't it? And it's only the last 16. This is what I mean about winning the thing. We all got a bit carried away and I was one of them.
Yeah,
but you've got to do that 180 times, three times before you get to a final. It's just hard, isn't it? It's the Champions League, and it really felt like it this time round.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get bogged down in the semantics of the game, because it is, you know, over a week later, but yeah, I did feel like Spurs really had Juve where they want them, and it's funny, you've got I don't want to let the result kind of cloud the way I saw the game at the time, because I think that can be dangerous, if that makes sense. But, you know, I remember at the start of the second half, they were getting booked a lot and they were committing a lot of fouls. And, you know, at the time, Spurs are 1-0 up and I'm thinking, oh, you know what, Tottenham have really got Juve where they want them here, and Juve are getting frustrated and they're really, you know, on the ropes, they're losing their cool, and this is just perfect. You know, what a performance. And then when you look back on it, and Pochettino made some comments that I'll come on to in a minute, but you look back on it and you think, well, actually, Juve were kicking Spurs out of their rhythm, they were disrupting the tempo, they were kind of laying the foundations for those two quick goals. And I think probably that the latter is more true. But at the time, I was thinking, you know, that they've lost their heads. And
is that our naivety as fans as well?
Well, then? Possibly. But I think, you know, I think probably the Spurs players believed it as well. Mm. And I think there was possibly a case of them at the start of the second half thinking, oh, you know, we're halfway there now. You know, this is all going really well. And then, you know, the sting in the tail came. And, yeah, to talk about those Pochettino comments that I alluded to, because I think they're really interesting. Having said immediately after the game, it wasn't about experience, and strongly kind of refuting that narrative, he then said in the pre-Bournemouth press conference at length about how much of a lesson Juve were, about what they'd done that made them a kind of elite, old money club that knows how to progress through that kind of game. And he kind of gave, a lot of the time you hear, oh, it was experience, it was know-how, it was clever, but you don't really ever get practical examples of that. And he actually gave kind of five or six practical examples. He said, you know, Andrea Agnelli, the president, was on the pitch with Pavel Neved, the director, you know, in Turin during the warm-up. He was literally with the players on the pitch.
Okay.
It would be like, you know, Levy and Donna Cullen, you know, walking down the pitch. You know, you just don't see that. He said Marotta, who's the kind of director of football, essentially, was in the tunnel putting pressure on the referee at half-time at Wembley. He said Juve were taking a lot of free kicks and the ball was still moving to keep the tempo up.
Mm.
He said they made a lot of fouls at the beginning of the second half to keep the tempo down. He said they collected a lot of goal kicks when the defender was still in the area to keep the tempo up.
Yeah.
So he gave all these practical examples, which is really interesting.
Mm.
And it was clever, because I think he basically wanted it to be known that Juve had done all these things that weren't really, you know, above board, like pressuring the referee. But he made it out as if he was saying it in...
Isn't this good?
It wasn't a complaint.
Yeah, yeah.
As if it was
admiration. But he doesn't,
admiration.
To be fair, Poch. He doesn't complain about stuff. Really?
No, but it was clever. And okay. I'm sure he does kind of admire it in a way. But he also wanted everyone to report it.
Yeah.
Without saying Pochettino whinged. but there you go. So I think ultimately he came to admit that Juve, you know, weren't necessarily a better team or a better football side, but just knew how to win more than Tottenham.
If this tie was played in, I don't know, a month's time again, say if it was the quarter final, do you feel like Spurs, the players are going to learn from this enough to be really like, what am I trying to say? Like, can we use the experience of the Juventus tie, for example, in if we got to the semi-final of the FA Cup, that sort of thing? Or is it totally different? And as a sort of follow-on question to that is, how much do you think of the way that we lost that tie, can we use that as a springboard for, like, we've got to get back into this competition next year? Not that they need any more motivation than they do, but they could have that little extra step and say, we've got to get back in this competition next year and put right a wrong. Not necessarily against Juventus, not necessarily against anyone, really, but do you know what I mean?
I honestly think more than any other game, almost under Pochettino, the Juventus tie, in fact, not just game, is something Spurs will learn from. I mean, I really think that. You know, it just felt like there were so many lessons there. I mean, I've already touched on some, like, don't freeze. Mm-hmm. You know, keep it tight after conceding, if you do concede, because it happens. And then all the things that Pochettino alluded to. I really think that it could be one of those defeats that does kind of, not necessarily propel Spurs up a level, but just teaches them one or two things. Because for so many players, I mean, the obvious ones are kind of Kane and Eriksen, you know, Kane and Ali, young players who haven't played that at that level of the Champions League before. But then even the experienced players like Eriksen, Dembele, I think it was their first Champions League knockout game. Mm. And they've been working towards that for most of their careers. Mm. Vertonghen as well. And I don't think you do learn that stuff in FA Cup finals. I'm not saying it's not transferable, but European football is very different to domestic football. So I think if Spurs get to the same stage next year and play a big team, they will be better for the Juve experience.
Yeah, I agree.
I just can't imagine they won't be.
Look at a player like Davinson Sanchez as well, who would have learned some really harsh lessons over the two games. Didn't play particularly badly necessarily, but he was taught two huge lessons, really. Shame, but I'm not like absolutely fuming, not absolutely distraught or anything over it. I think it's been an amazing Champions League.
It was gutting, wasn't it?
It was
sickening, but it wasn't shameful in any way.
And I think the Real Madrid game was underrated in 2011 as a bit of a shambles. We were fucking awful in that first game and made some really stupid decisions. And it never really got caught on because it was like, well, this is Real Madrid. But Juventus, you know, at the time, similar sort of standing, really.
I think we're kind of hindsight looking back at that game, and it was probably because Harry was manager, but it felt like much more of a day out than a quarterfinal under Pochettino would be. Like, I genuinely think a lot of the Spurs players and Pochettino himself thought they could win the Champions League this year.
Mm.
And I don't think that's necessarily naivety, because they'd beaten Real and Dortmund in the group stage, and they weren't far off beating Juve. And, you know, over four games against last year's finalists, they lost one and were probably the better team for sort of 85% of the minutes. In fact, the Real, that's probably a bit unfair on Real. But you know what I'm saying.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
So I think... It did feel like kind of less of a free hit, if you like, than the Redknapp quarterfinal did.
Yeah, I agree. The one talking point in terms of selection was Son over Lamella. Lamella obviously did really well in the first game, but Son came in, justified it with a goal, but he was dangerous all through the first half, wasn't
he? Yeah, I wanted to put that in the running order because I did an article with Ben Pearce for ESPN where we did a 50-50 where I argued for Lamella to start and Son, and he argued for Son to start.
Yeah.
I was obviously completely wrong. I didn't kind of fully believe in my argument, but it was a bit of content, and it got people talking, and it was one of the big talking points before the game.
Would you have put Lamella on at half time? Hindsight again, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hindsight. And I think, again, it goes back to my point about I don't want the result to cloud what I thought during the game, to sort of colour everything in retrospect. But, you know, I think Allegri got a lot of praise for being this tactical genius who changed the game with his two subs, and Poch got a lot of stick for not responding to that. But actually, Son had the beating of Barzagli, who was kind of playing on the right of a three-man defence, and it is a kind of old-school Italian centre-back who's not really expected to deal with a really quick technical player with 2 feet running at him constantly. So actually, had Son been slightly more clinical, it could have been, you know, 2-2 or 3-0 at half time, and then Allegri would have been taking massive pelters for playing Barzagli up against Son and looked very, very stupid. So
Fine margins. Son's a good place to segue into Bournemouth. Yeah, it looked like we had a bit of a hangover, because it wasn't just that we weren't particularly playing well. We were a bit shambolic for that first...
Yeah, dreadful.
First 15, 20 minutes in particular before we settled.
Hangover. And credit to Bournemouth.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing, didn't they? Yeah, definitely. And I think that we... again, this is hindsight, but I think for that first 30 minutes, we all thought we're in trouble here and our season's in danger.
Podcasting is just hindsight, isn't it? We should do one. We should just do one during the game.
Oh God, that'd be awful. The amount of stuff that we'd get wrong, because I'd just be like, well, that's it. That's season over, isn't it? Yeah. Because it was a little bit. Kane obviously goes off injured. Kane went off when it was 1-0, didn't he?
Yeah.
So it really did look bleak for us. And look, you said credit to Bournemouth there, but we had to react to that, in particular after the week that we've had. Question marks are being raised with the last game on a Sunday, which is always gets quite a little bit more scrutiny, I think, because it's sort of a standalone game last of the weekend. All eyes on us, and we did respond really, really well. And a lot of that comes down to the decision that Poch took when Kane went off, instead of putting Llorente on to move Son further up and put Lamella on to kind of match that intensity of Bournemouth. How did you think game overall, but yeah, the tactical shift in particular?
Obviously Kane going off became the big talking point of the game because it's Kane and it had to be. But actually the sort of story of the game was the Spurs squad coping without him, because I think a minute or so after he went off, the equaliser happened.
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
Through Ali. And then a minute or so after Ali went off, I think he was tired or he had a slight strain or something, I think the third goal went in. And then Rose, he was dreadful, limped off and Spurs scored the fourth goal. And it felt like, you know, not in the case of Rose, but you know, certainly in the case of Kane and Ali, you know, two very, very important players went off earlier than Pochettino would have liked, but you know, rather than that letting it affect them in any way, it was kind of the trigger for a bit more focus, a bit more sharpness, and a goal. So I do think, you know, that was the story of the game. Was how well Spurs responded, and that does show, you know, that does show spirit, it does show character, it does show togetherness, because it's not easy to lose Kane. And yeah, I think no one was particularly surprised when, I think it was between Moura and Lamella really who came on,
yeah,
rather than Llorente. And I do feel a bit for him, because I don't think he's played a minute since scoring a hat-trick, which does feel tough. I wouldn't be completely surprised if he started at Swansea, given that he scored there in the league and it's the FA Cup.
Yeah.
But yeah, the right call from Poch, and I think Lamella almost immediately had a big part in the equaliser. Kind of, won the ball on the halfway line, played it to Eriksen, he played it to Aurier, and it was a really nice cross from Aurier. He was kind of terrible, but like did all the clutch things really well. Yeah. Like was involved in two goals, scored the fourth, and yet was still terrible.
Back as well. Yeah, he's insane, isn't he?
Still
he's
mad.
Still not convinced, really. I think in terms of the tactical shift, really pleased it worked well, really pleased that we didn't go like for like and struggle, because we were struggling at the time, and to bring on someone who's a lesser player than Kane would have not been beneficial at all. But I think we probably do need to approach it with a bit of caution, in that Bournemouth had planned all week to play against an attack of Son, Eriksen, Ali behind Kane, and Kane and Son are obviously so, so different as strikers, main strikers, that the change and bringing on Lamella with his intensity, that change was quite stark, and I think that they probably didn't react to it particularly well. In games going forward, we've had this before. Son was incredible against Man City last season, wasn't he, in the 2-0 after Kane got injured, playing up front on his own. I think he had a couple more games where he was up front, scored a few goals, and then he just dropped dramatically. His form really, really dipped. So I approach this with caution. I'm really happy, and I think this could be a good change, freshen up the attack, different things for Eriksen to look for, different things for Ali to look for in Son instead of Kane. We're poorer for it, certainly. Short term, it's okay, but I just have a bit of concern, like say the Chelsea game, and then we've got City at home.
Yeah, I mean, look,
it's just something about it.
Yeah, obviously Spurs are like worse without Kane.
I know, that's not my point. My point is we're all saying at the moment, well, it's fine because we've got Son.
I see, yeah.
It may not be long until we start going, oh shit, we actually do, this isn't as good as...
I mean the best example is the first ankle injury he did last season against Sunderland in about September 2016, I think. And he was out for 2 months, and Alderweireld was out simultaneously, and it was the run that, that with hindsight, kind of was fatal to the title push in the end. There was that run, and I think it was all comps, and the Champions League challenge as well. It was all comps, one win or something.
In 11, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, but I do think Son has improved since then. I think one of the things that's noticeable is just how much better he is at one-on-ones. I think he got this kind of reputation as someone who bottled it when through on goal and would often miss the easy chances and score the half chances when he didn't have time to think. And in the last two league games, and in between, and against Rochdale and against Juve, he's had chances where he's had a bit of time, and the Juve goal was a hilarious scuff, actually. Yeah. The ones against Huddersfield and against Bournemouth, where he had loads and loads of time, he was running through on goal. I think maybe this time last year, you would not have kind of bet the farm on Son scoring that, but both times he's just very coolly taking it around the keeper, and I think he's improving at those kind of centre forward qualities, those skills you need. So that gives me a bit of optimism that, you know, if it is a serious injury for Kane, you know, he can play as a centre forward and he will score enough goals.
Danny Rose, you mentioned there, awful, absolutely awful, wasn't he?
I think their goal was him and Aurier were at fault. He got beaten way too easily, and then Aurier was dragged out of position into the middle, missed a header, and he should have just been sticking at the back post and closing down Stanislas. So it was a combination of the deputy fullbacks kind of getting it wrong.
Mad how they're the deputies as well, isn't it? They were clearly the way that our style of play, not to mention Rose's standing within the squad before the summer. Crazy to think that those two stylistically are second choice now as well. It doesn't really look good for Rose, does it? Because I think by now we all expected, regardless of the interview, regardless of his attitudes at the start of the season, if there was one indeed, I think we all expected by now that things, he would be fitter, he'd have played a few games and he'd be fighting for his place. And I don't really see him fighting for his place, and part of that is Davis's improvement, but even so, I'd be worried if Rose was first choice on this form.
Yeah, I think Rose's malaise kind of speaks to a wider issue, which is that it's really difficult for players in the Pochettino team who get hurt to then come back and win back their place. And Rose has touched on it this week, and I do think that sort of supporters are starting to understand that a bit better, because in the case of Alderweireld, there was a bit of an outcry that he wasn't kind of stuck in immediately for the Arsenal game and then the first leg in Juve, and a lot of people saying, oh, you just put him in. And then he had that setback to his hamstring, and it kind of vindicated, I think, Poch's decision to take it slow with him.
Wanyama's another example.
Winks is another example. It just feels like it's so, you know, it's so difficult for players to come back in and get any rhythm. And I think a lot of the time you hear about players saying, oh, we like playing midweek, we like playing three games in a week, and I think we often think, oh, that must be knackering. Sometimes I play 3 5-a-side games in a week and I'm like, I can't walk.
So now you're comparing yourself
sometimes we as supporters do say, but I think that players like it because it's not just about, it's not kind of like a football manager type thing where you're either injured or fit. It's like you have to get in, you have to get match fit and competitive and Pochettino match fit.
We are better when games are bunched, so definitely.
Yeah, and it just feels like Rose and Winks and Wanyama just can't get enough momentum to kind of get back to their best. And I thought Wanyama was pretty poor in the first half against Bournemouth. He was, you know, he's all right second half, but his first touch was off, his passing was a bit off, and then Winks wasn't even in the squad. And it does feel like for all those guys, you sort of wonder when they'll play a big game again.
Strange one. It's tough because we've got a good squad. We've got a decent size squad. We've got really excellent options when everyone's fit. But fit is different. Fit is different to match fit, which is different to just not injured. All of our players, apart from Kane at the moment, are not injured. But that is very different. I agree. I think fans are just about starting to get on board with that. Before we talk about Swansea, we've had the season ticket prices announced. What did you make of it? It's different. I don't mean to sound like a dickhead here, but it is different to you, for you.
Yeah, because you're
privileged position, rightly so. Correct. Hard work pays off, kids.
Yeah, exactly.
But it.
Yeah, I don't feel
Your point of view.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's really an issue for me because
it isn't because
I'm not going to be getting a season ticket and I've never had a season ticket even when I was only a supporter. I think it's one for you if you've got a view on it.
I'm not surprised, a little bit disappointed, but I'm not surprised. I don't think so. For the equivalent ticket from Old White Hart Lane in South Lower, it's a range. There is a range in the COP. It's from 995, I think, in the very, very front. So like proper front row. Then the next row up is at 1,250. And then it goes up to maybe 2K. I think that may be where the £2,000 seats are, a little bit further up in the COP end. Might be wrong about that, but it's an incremental thing. It's difficult for me to say. I don't want to sit here and be like, well, I want to start seeing results if this is what we're going to be paying. Sort of, I want Toby's new contract and all of that, because we know why they've gone up a little bit. They've gone up because demand has gone up. Wembley is full most match days, for as good as. And you will get that amount of people in New White Hart Lane as season ticket holders easily, because there's so many at Wembley. So I get it. If you don't take your ticket, someone else will.
Yeah.
And someone who's been sitting up in the gods at Wembley will jump at the chance of a £995 season ticket at the front of the COP. Just how it is. So I get it. I do think it's just a bad platform. And I do think that. So our cheapest seat being 995 means next season there is no cheapest ticket for under £1,000. It's just how they're not going to freeze prices, I don't think. They didn't freeze it for Wembley, so I don't think they're going to freeze it for here. They've got to pay for it. They know that they've got a lot of goodwill in that it's still home and everyone's still going to like it's new area. Not a new area. It's just another nail in the coffin a little bit for me. I'm a bit jaded with it anyway, like proper top level football, if you like. And I love Spurs and I love what we've done. But I don't see myself going for much longer than one more season. I'll do a season in a new stadium because I feel like I have to. But I'm not going to feel compelled to come back, I don't think. I really don't think I will. I can't justify it. And I've seen a lot of people say the exact same thing. You've got to be able to justify it. This isn't... £995 is quite a lot of money in one go. If you want your season ticket, you have to pay it in June. That's a lot of money at a difficult time for a lot of people. Just coming into summer holidays, you've got holidays for kids, you've got kids in general expensive. There's a lot of factors in there. And I know that it doesn't matter what time of year you release that. And I'm pleased they've released it in March so that people do have a little bit of time. But the whole phase approach as well seems a bit confusing. Just, I don't know. I get it. I just
do
don't
sound
like
a bit
it.
Jaded.
Yeah. I am a bit, but I've been jaded for years. Like, in general,
knackered
yeah, in
time.
General. But with football and Spurs, I do think we do get taken for a ride a bit. We've got the second most expensive season ticket in the league behind Arsenal. Chelsea may be on a par, but I know that we're certainly up there in top three. I think it is our cheapest season ticket. Is more expensive than Man City's most expensive season ticket, and it's just I don't know. It's hard to reconcile in my head. It's kind of, and I'm bored of having to do that every single season of thinking. And not being funny, you can sit there on the sofa and you can watch every single Tottenham game in a season, bar four that are in the FA Cup and not broadcast anywhere. You can get access to it, and I guess that's what that's what they're banking on. They know there's 100,000 fans around the world. There's people in Belgium I know that have got season ticket. They travel in because you can get here in an hour and a half, yeah. 2 hours to St Pancras on Eurostar, something like that. Loads of factors into it, and I get it. It's just, and I don't call myself the ordinary fan, because no one knows what that is anymore. It's just, I don't think I can be bothered with it. If yeah. it's going to get sanitised as well, it is going to get sanitised. You price out people, and it does become more of a middle-class crowd.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any secret in that. It's happened at the Emirates.
Yeah, I mean, I think the stadium's going to be absolutely stunning.
I agree, yeah, totally agree with that.
But, you know, all I'll say, Alex, I don't really think it is an issue for me, but all I'll say is that I think the club does have to be careful of the way I'd phrase it is, you know, catering too much for the prawn sandwiches and not enough for the chicken balti pies.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it does feel like there's a lot of aspects of that stadium that are going to be world class, and it's going to be such a good experience if you can get a ticket.
Mm.
But, you know, all this guff about, you know, the 1882 season ticket, the tunnel club
yeah.
the longest bar, the cheese factory, the microbrewery, mm. great, but I mean, they've also made a massive point of saying that they want it to be an incredible atmosphere. They've made that point several times.
Yeah.
And, you know, no matter how good the stadium is, and Arsenal is proof of this, if you can't get bums on seats, and if you can't get sort of passionate, for want of a better word, sort of salt of the earth Spurs fans bums on seats, then the atmosphere will suffer.
Mm.
So I think that's got to be a consideration. But, you know, I do feel like that's been taken into account, and as you said, it's just kind of supply and demand, isn't it?
It depends as well. You say it's been taken into account, but
I know the club have,
yeah,
have looked at what Arsenal have done and tried yeah. to basically take everything good and improve everything that yeah. hasn't worked.
Which sounds great. Mm. It does sound great. You put that in a press release, you're going to get excited fans for it. You've got to deliver it, because the only thing they've delivered so far is bricks and mortar. Say only. It's an incredible investment. It is going to be amazing. But there are some things that you can't really control. And for fans, there's only really two things that you properly give a shit about. A normal fan going to White Hart Lane 18 months ago, all they cared about was the team is good and they can get something to eat, something to drink in the ground. They don't really want anything else. Because otherwise, you know, no, there would have been no tears about leaving White Hart Lane. It's like, this place is crap. Let's tear it down. Let's build something new. And everyone understood it. But I just... You can't promise that the atmosphere is going to be good, or that you've made everything you possibly can to make the atmosphere good, but then champion all of the things that really don't make any difference at all to the atmosphere. They keep showing us pictures of the bars, and the cheese room is the obvious joke. All these things that they're showing us are these wonderful things, and then the ticket prices are brought out, and you think that's the one thing you can say as evidence. Something with a number next to it that you could say, well, we've tried to make the atmosphere good and here's how we're going to do it. Everything else is just beer and
PR.
It is PR. And shiny, it looks great, but if you look at the pictures they released, the mock-ups, it could be a shopping centre. There's people with, everyone's got a bag. Everyone's got a white bag with a Spurs badge on it. Everyone's wearing a Spurs shirt. Everyone's gone with a whole family. There's all ages. And that's fine. That's how it works. But it's not a shopping centre. You don't. The whole day should not be spent at a football stadium. But that's clearly what they're edging towards, isn't it? You go to the shop at 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock. You get a beer at 1. You get a meal, sit-down meal at 2. Then you go and watch football for an hour and a half. Then you maybe stay behind, have your dinner, go to the bar again, get some cheese room for the way home, and you're back by 8.
Cheese room for the way home.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. A bit of cheddar for you and before there.
No, mate. Posher than that. I'll go for a nice kind of soft brie. Smelly cheese.
I think you will get what we're given in that place.
No, then gourmet cheese room, mate. Sure you can.
I don't know. Sure you can. Select. I don't know enough about.
I haven't looked into. I think. Cheese room.
Yeah, I mean.
All the microbreweries.
Is it Spurs branded? Yeah. These are the questions that we need.
These are the big questions. Yeah. That I will can be asking Pochettino this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. Time will tell. Don't get me wrong. I'm looking forward to seeing it, but it will be interesting. Swansea away FA Cup. It's come around quite quickly this, actually. I think it's because we get so many bloody replays, but
No more replays now, though.
No more replays now. This is a perfect opportunity to bring it home to Wembley, if you like. Home. For the semi-final and the final, which everyone's saying could be an advantage. Big hurdle, but they're in quite a lot of trouble still in the league. Their priorities lie elsewhere. Should be a reasonable... It's a decent tie for us, isn't it?
It's a decent tie, but... But... Yeah, I mean, the international break follows it. So it's not as if Swansea have got a league game 3 days later they've got their eye on.
True.
They've also got a really good home record under Carvajal. I think they might be unbeaten in something like 10 there.
Yeah, we're the only team to have beaten since at home since he took over.
Okay, well, there you go.
I think.
So, yeah, I think it's trickier. I think it's trickier than perhaps it looks on paper, given their league position. Mm. I think Ayew is...
Jordan Ayew's suspended.
Which is a plus, because I think he's got a lot of their goals at home.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you know, that'll sort of be balanced out by the Kane absence. So I think it will be a really tough game. Lunchtime Saturday kickoff. It's just one of those, like Bournemouth, that you just don't want Spurs to sort of start it slowly and complacently. And the team will be very interesting, because I'm sure, you know, as I said, I think Llorente could start. You know, it kind of depends on... You know, I don't think Poch is planning to keep Llorente long term, put it that way.
No.
So it kind of depends whether he feels kind of any loyalty to him, and you know, whether he deserves to play in that match. I think Vorm will definitely be in there, though.
I mean, loyalty is interesting. I don't think he has any real loyalty to Llorente. He's done the job that we've asked him to do. And a hat-trick against Rochdale is... You should be doing that, mate. I think the loyalty question is more interesting for Vorm. Although I think we know that probably by the semi-final, his job's done as well. But someone like Foyth is an interesting one.
Yeah, really interesting. Exactly. Does he play him? Yeah, Alderweireld probably needs minutes. Mm. I don't know whether... I just don't know what's going on with him. He was training alone kind of last week. I think he... will probably be at the point where he's ready for some minutes on Saturday. And do you want to play... Does Poch play him with Foyth and give Vertonghen and Sanchez a week off? But I think it's a risk going to Swansea, and there would be a lot of anger, I think, if Spurs go to Swansea with a very much second team. And I know Pochettino doesn't look at it that way, but we all know what that means. If they were to go there and lose, which isn't... out of the question. So I think team selection, you know, normally we're sitting here before Rochdale or Newport or Wimbledon or whatever, just saying, just switch it all up. But I think in this instance, it's got to be a balance between, you know, players he thinks needs minutes and, you know, perhaps he owes something to, like Vorm, and players who are going to, you know, make sure that the job is done. Like Son and Eriksen and probably Dembele.
I mean, Moura is available
he's one that he's kind of fits in both categories and needs minutes, but also given his obvious quality that he's shown, you kind of trust him to really do a job.
The motivation is there, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the motivation is definitely there for these players.
Oh yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, interesting. It has got more significance since going out of the Champions League as well. I think it had more significance the minute that City were knocked out.
Yeah, I agree
in my
with that,
opinion.
Yeah. The minute they Liverpool. Were out and it was, you know, semi and a final Wembley. There's just nothing to fear for Tottenham at all.
No, and I mean Chelsea's Chelsea, but at Wembley we've got a bit of a hoodoo against them to put right. We've already beaten Man United there, and they're the two big guns still left. So yeah, it's just. It feels almost as like if we go strong in Swansea and we lose, it's going to be more humiliating. Do you know what I mean? Like, at least we could say, well, we still weren't that interested. If you put out Vorm, Foyth, Walker Peters, I don't know. to doom them down, but you could still point out and be like, well, weren't taking it seriously till the semi anyway.
There's no excuse for that, really.
There isn't, but I'm just thinking early. I'm getting it in early.
Yeah, okay.
Just got to think about these things. Yeah, Saturday lunchtime, isn't it, that one?
Yeah,
interesting. Well, we'll review that one when we are back next week. What's after that? Is it Chelsea after that?
It's your international break, and Chelsea on April 1st.
Oh, fitting. Okay, perfect. Well, we'll be back next week to review the Swansea game. We'll have a bit more of a chat then. Thanks for coming over, Dan.
No worries, mate.
Enjoy the mini eggs?
I did enjoy the mini eggs. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Very good.
See you later.
Cheers.
Bye.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.